Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Capitalist Realism, Is There No Alternative? By Mark Fisher is a compact but far-reaching work of cultural and political criticism that asks why it feels easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism. Fisher uses the phrase capitalist realism to describe a pervasive atmosphere in which market logic is treated as natural, inevitable, and beyond debate. Rather than focusing only on economics, he traces how this mindset shapes everyday life, work, education, popular culture, and mental health, often turning dissatisfaction into private problems instead of shared political questions. The book connects big ideas from critical theory to recognizable experiences such as bureaucratic workplaces, brand-driven identities, and a constant pressure to perform. Fisher writes with urgency and clarity, moving between close readings of films, music, and institutions and broader reflections on neoliberalism since the late 20th century. The result is a sharp diagnosis of the mood of contemporary society and a challenge to recover the possibility of alternatives. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, defining capitalist realism as an atmosphere, not just an ideology, a central topic in the book is the claim that capitalist realism operates less like a set of arguments and more like a background condition. Fisher describes it as a common sense that saturates institutions and habits, making capitalism appear not merely dominant but unavoidable. This is why debates often start from assumptions that markets must be the ultimate judge of value, that public services should mimic business, and that political imagination must remain within narrow limits. The power of capitalist realism lies in how it presents itself as realism, framing alternatives as naive or dangerous while treating existing arrangements as practical and mature. Fisher emphasizes how this atmosphere affects perception. People may recognize serious problems such as inequality, ecological crisis, or precarious work, yet still struggle to picture structural change. The book explores the feeling that even critique has been absorbed, turning rebellion into style and dissent into content. By treating capitalist realism as an environment, Fisher shifts the question from which ideas people endorse to how institutions train attention, desire, and expectations. The concept helps explain why resignation can coexist with constant noise, and why the system can feel both fragile and inescapable at the same time. Secondly, culture, media, and the recycling of the new, Fisher pays close attention to popular culture as a diagnostic tool. One of his recurring concerns is how entertainment and media can reflect and reinforce capitalist realism by narrowing the range of what feels possible. He discusses how culture often becomes dominated by repetition, pastiche, and a constant recycling of familiar forms, which can produce the sense that the future has been canceled. This is not presented as a simple complaint about taste. Instead, it is tied to deeper conditions, commercialization, risk aversion in cultural industries, and a broader economic logic that prioritizes immediate returns over experimentation. In that context, even innovation can be packaged as product differentiation rather than genuine change. Fisher also shows how critique is frequently anticipated and neutralized. Cultural objects can acknowledge social problems while offering only individualized catharsis or ironic distance, leaving underlying structures untouched. The result is a culture that can feel intensely self-aware but politically immobilized. By analyzing films, music, and contemporary media moods, Fisher highlights how imagination is disciplined. Culture becomes a site where the limits of realism are rehearsed daily, shaping what audiences expect from life, politics, and even their own aspirations. Thirdly, work, bureaucracy, and the business model as common sense. Another key topic is the transformation of workplaces and public institutions under neoliberal management. Fisher argues that capitalist realism does not eliminate bureaucracy, but often multiplies it in new forms. Metrics, audits, targets, and performance indicators spread across sectors that once claimed different values, including education and public services. These tools are justified as neutral accountability, yet they can shift priorities toward what can be measured rather than what actually matters. Fisher links this to the experience of being constantly assessed, compelled to demonstrate productivity, and pushed to treat oneself as a portfolio. The business model becomes a default template for organizing life, even when it generates stress, inefficiency, and a loss of meaning. He explores how this managerial culture can fragment solidarity by turning colleagues into competitors and by presenting systemic pressures as personal shortcomings. The topic also connects to a broader political point. When institutions are reorganized to mimic markets, it becomes harder to defend them as public goods. They start to look like failing businesses rather than shared commitments, making privatization and austerity appear like inevitable responses. Fisher uses these observations to show how capitalist realism embeds itself through procedures, not just propaganda. Fourthly, mental health and the privatization of stress. Fisher is known for connecting politics to mental health, and this book develops that connection by asking how distress is interpreted. A major topic is the tendency within capitalist realism to treat depression, anxiety, and burnout primarily as individual pathologies rather than as responses to social conditions. When suffering is framed as a personal chemical imbalance or a failure of resilience, the solution becomes private coping, self-management, and medicalization, while the surrounding pressures remain unquestioned. Fisher does not dismiss biology or clinical care. Instead, he challenges the assumption that the social order is neutral in the production of misery. He suggests that precarious employment, constant evaluation, debt, and an always-on culture of comparison can generate chronic stress that is then routed back into individuals as shame. This feedback loop is politically important because it weakens collective agency. If people learn to interpret their exhaustion as a personal defect, they are less likely to see it as a shared condition that could be changed. Fisher also highlights how therapeutic language can be co-opted by workplace culture, promoting positivity and adaptability while leaving exploitative structures intact. The topic pushes readers to rethink mental health as a site where ideology becomes embodied. Lastly, reopening the question of alternatives and collective agency, the question in the subtitle, "Is There No Alternative?" points to the book's most forward-looking topic, how to break the spell of inevitability. Fisher argues that capitalist realism thrives on the collapse of political imagination, so challenging it requires more than criticizing specific policies. It requires rebuilding the sense that different futures are possible and that collective action can matter. He examines how capitalism absorbs critique and how opposition can be redirected into consumer choice or lifestyle branding, which feels expressive but rarely shifts power. In response, Fisher emphasizes the need to identify points where the system contradicts its own claims, such as the promise of freedom alongside coercive work conditions, or the claim of efficiency alongside wasteful managerial bureaucracy. These contradictions can become openings for new forms of organizing and new narratives of the future. Fisher is also attentive to how desires are shaped, suggesting that alternatives must address what people long for, not only what they oppose. Rather than presenting a finished program, the book encourages readers to treat politics as a struggle over realism itself, what counts as practical, what is dismissed as utopian, and who gets to define the limits of the possible. The topic ultimately invites experimentation in culture, institutions, and solidarity. In conclusion, this book suits readers who want to understand the mood of contemporary life, especially students, educators, cultural workers, organizers, and anyone frustrated by the sense that politics has been reduced to minor adjustments. It is also valuable for readers interested in how capitalism shapes attention, identity, and well-being beyond the usual economic headlines. Fisher can benefit a reader's life by giving language to experiences that often feel private and inarticulate. The pressure to constantly perform, the exhaustion produced by metrics and competition, and the way culture can feel saturated with repetition. By naming these patterns, the book helps readers separate personal shame from structural conditions and encourages more humane, collective interpretations of stress and dissatisfaction. Compared with many similar critiques of neoliberalism, this book is worth buying because it is both intellectually ambitious and culturally grounded. Fisher bridges theory and everyday examples without turning the argument into a dry academic exercise. He also addresses institutions like schools and workplaces alongside media and mental health, offering a wide lens in a short format. The result is a sharp, portable framework that readers can apply immediately when analyzing news, workplace reforms, or the stories culture tells about what is possible. If you would like to support Mart Fisher, you can buy the books through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.